the same way as I was reacting to minute amounts of chemicals. So it became literally impossible for me to live in my own home. And that's when things really started to get scary, because I became homeless, and not for lack of money, but because my nervous system was so sensitized that I could no longer live in my home. So I started to camp and lived in a broken down houseboat for a while. But even prior to moving into the great outdoors, camping and living in the houseboat, I knew that there was something wrong with the way that my brain was processing information. And that's really where this whole thing started, was, again, my personal suffering was the catalyst for finding a solution. So that was the long answer to the question.
Well, I mean, and then also you followed your intuition and you knew something wasn't right, and you were curious and you kind of honed in that maybe it was related to something happening in your brain. So who were some of the scientists and doctors that inspired you as you started doing research on, you know, on the brain?
Yeah, thank you. Another really great question. First of all, I knew that there was an overlap between many different conditions, many chronic and complex health conditions, because, you know, even within the chemical sensitivity population, it was very rare for a person just to have chemical sensitivities, right? They would have chemical sensitivities and chronic pain issues and digestive issues and chronic fatigue syndrome and possibly, you know, chronic Lyme disease as well. So I started looking at brain research that really was a key for me in recognizing that the common denominator for a lot of these chronic illnesses was overactivation of certain areas of the brain that were located in the limbic system. It also made sense to me that my brain was involved, because I just knew that I wasn't processing sensory information anymore. I was like, why is it that somebody else can walk down the grocery aisle of a store and, you know, walk down the grocery aisle where they're, you know, the laundry detergent aisle, and be perfectly okay? And if I did that, I might go into central nervous system convulsions. I'm like, obviously, wow, there's something wrong with the way that my brain is processing. Excuse me. So again, I found a lot of research that pointed to the limbic system being a portion of that. And also, it just made sense to me to start researching limbic system function, because the limbic system is the area for sense of smell, where sense of smell is processed in the brain. So logically, it just made sense to me to start looking at the limbic system. But I think a really big catalyst for understanding and exploring neuroplasticity is a potential cause and solution for the chronic illnesses that I was dealing with, was through reading the book, The Brain That Changes Itself by Dr. Norman Doidge.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, amazing book. And when I understood that my brain was not fixed and that I had agency to actually change the structure and function of my brain, it was such an aha moment. And I really looked at exploring the neuroplasticians who were featured in The Brain That Changes Itself. And this gave me great insight into what was happening in my own brain and how I could possibly go about making changes. So some of the scientists that were featured in there, my goodness, it's been so long, I can't remember all of them, but you know, one of them was Dr. R.S. Ramachandran, and he was working with how imagination could change brain function in his work with phantom limb pain. And then there was Dr. Pascal Lioni, who was exploring how the power of thought and how thinking alone can change the structure of the brain. Or I think there was another one about constraint-induced therapy, which is a form of rehabilitation for stroke patients, where specific repetitive exercises helps a brain to form new neural pathways. I think Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz was also featured in that. And Jeffrey Schwartz would work with patients who are suffering from OCD. And he connected how brain functions and symptoms of illness, and through awareness and distraction, he was able to help patients decrease symptoms. So really, I combined a lot of information that I was already working with, or skill sets that I already had through working as a core belief counselor, where I really looked at patterns of thinking, feeling, and behaviors that were leading to certain outcomes, and really incorporating some NLP techniques and the theories that were explored in The Brain That Changes Itself, and applied that to myself. And the entire story of how I came up with the program and I developed the program and the science behind the program, of course, is detailed in my book that you already mentioned that I published in 2014 called Hardwired for Healing, Remapping the Brain to Recover from Chronic and Mysterious Illnesses. So really, I think one of the, again, coming back to the question, one of the bigger influences was Dr. Norman Doidge.
Absolutely. And so what kind of symptoms might indicate that a person has limbic system impairment? I know it probably is all over the place, but what are some of the symptoms that you've heard people talk about?
Well, the symptoms can vary from person to person, and I'm sure that's the case with a lot of your listeners. But really, it can, and they can express as seemingly unrelated symptoms, like unrelated physical symptoms or even emotional symptoms or psychological symptoms. Mm-hmm. But what people might notice are changes in autonomic nervous system function. So the automatic functions of your body, such as heart rate. So they might have tachycardia or breathing issues or digestion issues. Some people might feel fatigued, or they might be more sensitive to various different sorts of stimuli, like they could be sensitive to chemicals like I was, or sensitive to light or sounds or touch or food. Symptoms can also include brain fog, headaches, chronic pain, chronic inflammation, immune system conditions are common as well, irritability, anxiety, depression, and a lot more. I think if people are interested to see if they might be experiencing symptoms of limbic system impairment, I would suggest that they look at a self-assessment survey that is on the homepage of our website. And it's a 20-question survey that they can actually go through, and it might help them.
Yeah, that's great. We'll post that link in our show notes for sure.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've been doing the program, and I just really love hearing the testimonials from participants in the program. Can you paint a picture for our listeners just a little bit about what the practice might be like? I did my practice this morning at the beach.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's really an interesting question, one that's hard to answer because it's going to look different for different people. But yeah. I think when we talk about the practice, I would like to really elaborate on what the practice means. And I think it's really important for people to recognize that there are many different elements to the program, because a lot of times people might think that the practice involves just one of the pillars of the program, which is doing the DNRS retraining steps, but it actually includes five pillars of recovery. And we want to make sure that people are really looking at how they're implementing all five pillars of recovery on a daily basis. So I think I'd like to take a moment just to talk about the pillars of recovery so that can paint like a bigger picture of what's involved. So the first pillar of recovery is to really recognize the link between your brain and your condition. And we really go into that quite a bit in the instructional video program about the link between your brain and your condition, and really, you know, getting to the meat of the matter is in terms of limbic system impairment and how that might be contributing to the symptoms that you're having. In pillar two, we learn to recognize old neural pathways that keep us in a state of survival, and learn to shift our thoughts, emotions, and behaviors to create new neural pathways. In pillar three, which some people refer to as a practice, that's really about learning the DNRS retraining steps that involve a step-by-step exercise that includes speech, movement, and visualization techniques. And the intention of this step is to really decrease firing of threat centers in the brain and change the brain chemistry from hormones that are associated with the stress response to hormones and neurotransmitters that are associated with the state of growth and repair. And the fourth pillar is something that we call incremental training. And this is really a desensitization technique where you challenge yourself in small increments to change the brain's patterned threat reaction to specific stimuli. And in pillar five, we learn the importance of elevating your emotional state And this really helps to send a cue of safety to the brain and helps regulate the autonomic nervous system. So again, it's quite complex, and it's going to look different for different people. And again, I would suggest that if people are curious about, I would suggest that people do the program, but if they would like to have help in understanding the program or community support and how different people are applying the program, we have one of these ongoing support service offerings that we have is called Living DNRS. And that's where a group of peers will get together and they're guided by one of our instructors and really examine how to apply the five pillars in their life. And also you get amazing ideas from other people about how they're applying all five pillars into their life as well.
That's great. Yeah, I love hearing some of the terminology you just brought up. And I am the kind of geek that loves to understand everything. But I think for me, sometimes that gets in my way because I feel like I have to understand everything for it to happen. And the reality is it just works. And so you don't always need to know, right? But I think as people with chronic illness, we've been seeking for so long answers that sometimes we get stuck in that. And it was actually a Thai massage therapist who said to me, you know, Sarah, people in Thailand don't know the names of any of the muscles. They just know how to heal the muscles. And I thought, oh, that's a really good point. So, you know, when things work, they just work.
Yeah, that's true. That is so true.
And sometimes needing to know everything can also get in our way. It can create another barrier.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes simple things really work. And it's not that I always say that the brain is a pattern recognition organ, right? Mm-hmm. So if we look at it in that way, it actually makes things make a lot of sense. And mm-hmm. when you recognize that the brain has just been stuck in this fight, flight, or freeze response to no fault of your own, it's not your fault. And, it's not your fault, period, right? It's just not your fault. Your brain got stuck in a trauma response. So, you know, the focus becomes how do we get the brain out of a trauma response? Rather than trying to figure out everything behind that or how it works, it's like just how do we get the brain out of a trauma response? How do we create that condition for the brain to actually shift gears? Mm-hmm. And it's as simple as that, really.
Right. Have mm-hmm. participants with Lyme disease experienced a reduction in symptoms? I know I have.
Yeah. In fact, you know, I would hazard to say that there are thousands of people that have with chronic Lyme disease that have experienced great reduction in symptoms. And I think that if people, two of my favorite stories, of course, are two of our certified DNRS coaches, Riley and Denicia. And their success stories are on our website. So if people want to look at more success stories or Riley and Anicia's success stories are on our website under success stories. But I would say thousands of people, because again, like I said, it's rare that people just have chronic Lyme disease.
Right.
I mean, you might be diagnosed with chronic Lyme disease, but really look at the symptoms that are common in a lot of other people that are suffering from limbic system impairment. And they'll be pleasantly surprised, or maybe not feel so alone, and recognize that there are other options available for addressing the brain portion of what's happening in chronic Lyme disease.
And then is retraining the brain helpful for people with symptoms of long COVID?
Yes. And, I was sitting back just kind of watching this whole COVID pandemic roll out. And I knew when I started to hear patients were suffering from symptoms of long COVID, I thought, oh, the limbic system is definitely involved. So, you know, over time, we started seeing people apply the program for symptoms of long COVID. And again, many, 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 many people have applied the program for long COVID and are experiencing great results. One person that comes to mind specifically is Sandra. She was a doctor who lives in Sweden, I think. Yeah. And Sandra was one of the first patients that was actually admitted into the long COVID clinic in Sweden. And she was suffering severe cognitive decline, so much so that she forgot how to write. She didn't know what letters meant anymore. She had postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, mast cell activation syndrome. She had headaches, vision issues, gut issues, brain fog. She was experiencing fatigue and weakness. She was actually confined to a wheelchair most of the time and could barely move. She had sensitivities to light, sound, and severe chemical sensitivities eventually. She also had numbness in her hands and face and had suffered from insomnia and had blood pressure issues. And she fully recovered within a few months of implementing DNRS.
That's amazing.
And she's back at work, leading a full life, and she's healthy and so pleased because now she can take care of herself and her daughter, her young daughter. So it's quite amazing. So again, there are success stories of people that have recovered from long COVID on our website. But also there are a number of people. We have an online forum called our Global Community Forum, which is a members only professionally moderated forum. And there are many people on the forum who are also recovering from some symptoms of long COVID. And for some people, COVID is the tip of the iceberg, or it's just one of the contributing factors of limbic system impairment. And it could have been the virus that threw the limbic system into this fight, flight, or freeze response, or it could have been an accumulation of other things that were happening. But either way, yes, we've had great results with people with long COVID.
Right. And even just that constant state of fear was really disabling for most people.
Yes. And it's not just, I mean, whether you've had the infection or not at this point, living in fear for 2 years. Definitely has an effect on brain function.
And so is there any new research that you're excited about that you're following right now or that you're involved in?
Actually, the research is around long COVID. So we have two research studies happening right now. So researchers from the Karolinska Institute in Sweden are conducting a retrospective study on the effectiveness of DNRS on patients with severe symptoms of long COVID and postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. The study has not been published, but early findings are suggesting really great results. And the University of Alberta in Canada has applied for funding to conduct a clinical trial on the DNRS program to measure improvements in health-related quality of life in people with long COVID and chronic fatigue. We are very hopeful that both of these studies will move forward in good time, of course, because we know that there are millions of people who are needlessly suffering and are looking for effective treatments. So we're really hoping that that moves forward in a timely fashion.
Oh, that's exciting. Wow.
Yeah.
We'll keep an eye on that on your website, too. Well, you
Thank
know,
you.
So many people with chronic illness, they spend months and years trying to find answers. But you, Annie, like you just took it to the next level with your research. And I'm so thankful you did because so many people are benefiting from the results of your research and the program that you put together. And I'm just so inspired by your curiosity and your leadership in this field. And I really think everyone can benefit from limbic system retraining. So thank you for coming on our podcast and sharing your expertise with all of us.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me, Sarah. And I really hope that this is helpful for people that are listening. And just know that there is hope. And you're not alone. So thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
Wow, that is remarkable to think of the brain as a pattern recognition organ. We can train our brains to decrease the firing of threat centers, and that changes hormones and neurotransmitters that lead to growth and repair. Take back the calm in your life. Thank you for listening. Stay safe in the outdoors.
Maybe that should be our new motto for this post-COVID world we're living in, or nearly post-COVID world we're living in. Take back the calm in your life. It's nice to know that these... You know, sometimes these mental habits and these mental ways of thinking that can be positive but could also trouble us and cause problems for us so much can in fact be changed and retrained. We're not stuck with them. A very interesting program thanks to the Canadian Lyme Society for that segment there. Unfortunately, we actually don't have quite enough time in the remainder of the show for the documentary on generosity I was going to feature. That's too bad, but we'll bring it back another week. It's here in our library, and it's a really interesting one, produced by CJSF. It's just about 10 minutes to 11. Coming up in just a few minutes is Democracy Now, right at the top of the hour. Your daily dose, daily dose of alternative news, speaking truth to power. That's why we're here at CJSF. One of the ones I want to, you know, that's why we're here. But, you know, another reason we're here at CJSF is because of you out there, our listeners. You know, radio is a medium that means nothing without without listeners, without you out there in the community tuning in and listening to the program we create, listening that we're being there as the people we're thinking about when we're creating programs here at CJSF. You know, everyone who does a show has a bit of an idea of who they think they're broadcasting to. Sometimes it's really realistic, you know, it really does reflect the audience. Sometimes it's sort of a figment of our imagination, you know, a group of folks that we think, we imagine are sitting out there. But whatever happens, none of this that we're doing here on CJSF would matter at all, would have a purpose or a point of order for you out there as our listeners. And we are so thankful that you take the trouble to tune into us, because we know, unlike, you know, that the programming on CJSF is very varied. It's a bit of this and it's a bit of that. You know, we have a responsibility to serve many different audiences, which means rarely will any individual person find everything that we do on the radio to is of their interest. So being a listener to CJSF takes a little more effort. You got to know when things are on that you like, and you got to make that effort to tune in. And we really appreciate the fact that you do that and that you're here for us as a listener, making what we do here at CJSF meaningful and purposeful and valuable. We really believe in the value of what we're doing, and we're glad that you show that by being out there on the other end of the radio. Remember, you can always call us in the studio here, or you can send us a text message. The same phone number works for both of those things, and someone will get your message. You can call 778-782-2573 or send us a text message to that number, 778-782-2573. You're also able to contact us through our various social media channels. We have a Facebook page. We have a Twitter account, which is at CJSF. We have Instagram, which is at CJSFFM. We have a new TikTok account, which has been pretty busy this last 4 or 5 months. And all of those social media channels have a way that you can respond back to us through either through a direct message or by commenting on the posts we're making. And if you ever want to contact us, please do. We'd love to hear from you. We always love to hear from our listeners. You know, radio isn't just us sitting here in the studio talking out to you, but it really is a two-way conversation, and we'd love you to take part in that. All right, so thank you for being out there. It is really appreciated. All right, you know, one of my favorite segments of the show, and it's a great feature. We don't produce it here at CJSF, but it's one of my favorite segments, and I think a lot of our programmers like it too, because I hear it in a lot of different shows, is Bird Note. And this is our Bird Note for today, May 1st. It is May Day, the International Day of Labor, but we're going to talk about the California quail instead. Here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. Does this bird seem to be saying, Chicago, Chicago? Don't be misled. This small ground bird, the California quail, is strictly a bird of the far west. The California quail's gray and rusty-colored body is beautifully adorned. And the most distinctive characteristic of this quail is a black forward-facing topknot that juts out from the bird's forehead like a small flag. Although quail can fly short distances, they spend most of their time on the ground foraging for food. When they're threatened, they scurry into thick brush. Quail build their well-concealed nests right on the ground, which can hold from 1 to 24 eggs. 24? Yes, the large clutches may include eggs from more than one female. Immediately after hatching, the chicks follow their parents around the neighborhood scratching for food. Two or more quail families may join together to form a covey of quail. With such a large extended family, it's not surprising when a male California quail hops up onto a stump to gather the covey together with this rallying call. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann. BirdNote's newsletter delivers the wonder and joy of birds directly to your inbox. Sign up at birdnote.org to get a weekly preview of our shows, stories, photos, and more.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As mountain glaciers melt, they create high-altitude lakes dammed by rocks or ice. If pressure builds or landslides or ice avalanches occur, that natural dam can break. Water and debris can then rush down the mountainsides, devastating communities. Tom Robinson is a senior lecturer in disaster risk and resilience at the University of Canterbury. He says global warming is causing glaciers to melt faster.
And so there's more and more water going into these lakes.
Water that can flood communities. In a recent study, Robinson assessed the risks on a global scale.
What our study's done is not just looked at where the lakes are and how big those lakes are. We've actually looked at how many people live in the catchments downstream of those lakes and how vulnerable those people are to impacts from flooding.
The researchers found that about 15 million people are at risk, and more than half of them live in just four countries: India, Pakistan, Peru, and China. So Robinson urges communities to prepare. He says engineering solutions, like installing sluicing gates or lowering the lake levels, could help protect people. And he says everyone can do their part by reducing global warming. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Do you like music, or do you like technology, or do you like talking to people? CGSF Radio is the place for you. Here at CGSF, the opportunities are endless. You can interview artists and bands, speak up for what you believe in, or even host your own show, and tons more. To find out more information, visit cgsf.ca.
We're just about at the end of our program for today. My name is Magnus Teeval, and I've been your host for the last hour. Hope you enjoyed the program. Speak Up will be back tomorrow morning with some more features on what's going on in your world. And I'll be back in this slot, in this chair next Monday with what I'm hoping are a couple good interviews. I'm working on an interview with some folks from the city of Burnaby, a councillor and staff person, about the project the city's working on to both research the discrimination against the Chinese community, historical discrimination against the Chinese community in Burnaby, and formulating an apology that will be both passed by Burnaby City Council and delivered by the mayor when it all is ready. And we'll find out a whole lot more about that. We're going to talk with folks about the proposed new flight routes over North Burnaby, proposed by Nav Canada, and some things people who aren't so happy about that have to say about that. So hopefully that'll be coming up next week as well. Don't forget, you're listening. Your Democracy Now! Is coming up in about 30 seconds. A little later in the program, or in the day, is Wandering Rhythms. Oof, sorry, sneeze there. Wandering Rhythms up at noon. Generic Alternative with Alex Morris at 2 p.m. and up at 3 o'clock is typically Tuesday. Thanks for listening today. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM coming to you from the top of Burnaby Mountain.
Hi, I'm